Welcome to The Vampire Squid, a podcast about increasing transparency and education in finance. This is your host, Alan Lee, and welcome to episode 9 of The Vampire Squid. Finally in New York now, and it is good to know that I will be in the same time zone and not switching every other week like I have for the past 3 months. Today we have a very exciting episode too. It will be on investment banking recruiting. I know a lot of you have been emailing me questions asking for this interview, so finally got around to jotting down some notes, and hopefully you will find this episode helpful today. As always, if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to visit my website, thevampiresquid.com, and go to the contact tab. Also, please subscribe to my Facebook page, facebook.com/thevampiresquid, for live updates on episodes and blog updates and whatnot. So I thought the best way to structure the investment banking and recruiting is to actually break it up into 3 episodes, because it's a little bit difficult to cover everything in a 25 to 30 minute episode. So today we'll go over the overview. So the timeline from start to finish of the investment banking and recruiting process. And the second episode will cover solely behavioral questions. And the third episode will cover solely technical questions. And for today's episode, for the overview, we'll cover things like number of interviews, information sessions, dress code, bulge bracket versus boutique, how to use leverage, everything and anything that has to do from start to finish with the investment banking recruiting process, so that you guys have the most comprehensive overview of what it's like to go through investment banking recruiting. So to start off, I just want to make the quick distinction between target versus non-target schools. So target schools are where the investment bank comes onto campus to recruit. They usually fly in a few representatives and you interview with them on your school campus. For non-target, you usually will have to submit an online application, and you'll have a first round over the phone, and then for the final round, they'll bring you into the office for you to interview with them in person. And it's really cool because Goldman is actually providing a new initiative for first round interviews. They're doing first round video interviews. It's not very clear what it will entail exactly just yet, but I assume that you'll have to submit a recorded video of yourself answering questions that are preset. And this is pretty beneficial in a few ways, because it gives everyone a more equal opportunity to actually get in front of interviewers from the firm. And I think many other firms may follow suit in the future. But this provides an equal setting, because I've gotten a lot of questions from people from quote unquote non-target schools saying it's very hard to just even get the first round or to be able to voice your thoughts and your opinions and your experience to the recruiters coming from a non-target. But I think this initiative helps level the playing field a lot. And you know, to be honest, I think throughout my experience, a lot of the best analysts actually came from quote unquote non-target schools. So I applaud this initiative. So to start in the very beginning, investment banks usually have something called information sessions. And information sessions are when the company comes and gives a presentation on what they do, why they're the best investment bank, the company culture, and they'll probably have a few senior level people there, a few managing directors, and they'll have some junior level people there, and analysts and associates. And they'll give the presentation for 15 to 20 minutes and then leave about 40 minutes for Q&A and mingling. The question I get asked a lot is this company info session worth going to? Because usually these events attract hundreds of people, and it's quite difficult to actually even get in front of an analyst or an MD or one of the investment bankers. I think the answer depends on whether or not it's worth going. So if you have a very strong resume, if you have a very high GPA, great school, very relevant work experience, and you know that you're going to get the interview, then I don't necessarily think this is necessary for you to go to. I had quite a few friends that didn't go to any information sessions, and they got invites to first round interviews by all the investment banks. So I think if you're in this very top notch, maybe top 5% of the class. You don't necessarily need to go to the information session unless you really actually want to learn a little bit more about what they do, but that's easily found online. I'd say if you're on the brink, if your resume is on the brink, you have a good GPA, but not the best. You have relevant work experience, but it's not the best work experience. I'd say you should go if you're an individual that is usually good at sort of mingling and networking and talking, and you're comfortable with talking. So I would play to your strengths. If you are very nervous, or you get nervous in front of people, or are slightly awkward and you make a bad impression, I don't know if it's the best thing to go, but this is really up to your discretion. If you feel confident in your ability to engage and have conversations with people, and you're on the brink, it may be worth going. And then if you're below average, or if you're below the brink, I would definitely recommend going to these information sessions and try to make as big as an impression as you can. This is because your resume is most likely not going to get picked. And unless they remember you from the information session, or you've spoken to a managing director or some of the analysts, then they'll have this impression of you, and hopefully you'll get your resume picked for the first round interviews. And also, one distinction I want to make is the boutique versus bulge bracket information sessions. So the bulge bracket information sessions, I would say, are not as important to go to as the boutique ones, because the boutique ones are usually a little bit smaller. They have a higher emphasis on company culture, and they want to see a demonstrated interest in their company. So I know that with a lot of the boutique investment banks, when they were holding information sessions, they actually were asking for emails of candidates that they thought were very good. So a few friends of mine said that some of the managing directors asked for their email address, asked them to submit their resume personally to them. Boutiques really like it if you attend their information sessions. So if you're interested in boutique banks, I would highly recommend going to their information sessions, because they place more emphasis on a demonstrated interest and fit into the culture of the firm. Great. So now you've gone to the information session, and then after a few weeks, you'll probably submit a resume. And you'll submit a resume either into their online application or through your school's on-campus recruiting. Now, let's dive into, you know, how we screen these resumes. So once we receive this packet from your school, this will be about 200 to 300 resumes in this PDF file that the analyst and maybe some associates will go over. So from my experience from Berkeley, we saw, you know, a 250-page resume book. And what you do is you'll have, from our experience, we had around five or six alumni from Berkeley that were analysts at the time that I was there. And we'd all go over the resumes, and in the next few days, cast votes for who we think were the best people. And of the best people that gets chosen, then that would be vetted by a more senior person, like a managing director or a vice president, who will have final sign off on who gets the first round interviews. So what do we look for when we're going through these resumes? I mean, I think the way the resume is structured is a pretty good indication of how important things are. So we look at things first at your GPA, your test scores, your major, then we'll look at your work experience, and then we'll look at your extracurricular experience on campus, and then some of your interests and skills that you have. On average, I would say the middle 80% of candidates are between 3.3 to 3.7 or 3.8 GPA. They have a fairly good SAT score, somewhere around 1900 or 2000 and above. And they have some relevant work experience or some tangential work experience. So for people that have relevant banking experience, usually someone has worked in a boutique investment bank their sophomore summer. So this could be a more smaller known bank. We also see students with other work experience that aren't even tied to investment banking. We'll see students that have done an internship at Apple or at Amazon, some of the usually the bigger name corporations as well. And people always ask, since I'm a humanities major, am I going to be at a disadvantage to an economics or a business major? I would say for bulge brackets, it does not matter as long as you have a fairly high GPA. There were definitely candidates that were English majors, that are philosophy majors, that are history majors that have done very well in the investment banking recruiting process. I would say investment banks like Goldman or like bulge brackets, they really look for someone that is unique and diverse. They don't necessarily want candidates that are just investment banking machines that have done investment banking for their entire lives and have known since seventh grade that they want to go into investment banking. However, for boutique banks, they usually like it if you have more work experience in investment banking and if you're a finance major or an econ major. This is a trend that I've noticed. Usually the students that have a more unique major or are in engineering even don't get selected for first round interviews for the boutique firms. Rather, the people that have work experience in a boutique bank and, you know, have taken a lot of finance coursework do get selected. And I think the reason is because boutique banks are obviously a lot smaller and they don't have that much room for ramping up an individual. While bulge bracket investment banks are usually very big, they have a more robust training program, and they don't need every single person to be have that much financial experience, while a boutique bank may have. So by using this above method, looking at people with high test scores, good GPAs, good schools, good work experience, we'll probably fill up around 80% of the slots. And for the remaining 20% of the slots, I would say these can be decided by outliers. And what I mean by outliers is those who don't necessarily have a high GPA or relevant work experience or high test scores, but these students are more unique. They are your student athletes. They are people that have maybe have founded companies while on campus. They have the certain X factor that makes them stand out. And Goldman especially, or investment banks in general, are very big on this because they believe in something called transferable skills. So they believe if you can excel in at least one area of life, you can do investment banking, because at the core, investment banking is not that hard. It's some simple mathematics with a good work ethic and determination, and you can be a good investment banker. So if you were, say, you know, a junior Olympic athlete, or if you play on the Division I tennis team or the football team, or if you're, you know, a classical pianist that has played at the Sydney Opera, things like that, they really stand out to people that screen your resumes and bring some diversity into the field. So I always get the question, hey, I don't have a good GPA. Hey, my school's not that great, or I have low test scores. How do I get the interview with Goldman, or how do I get an interview with these investment banks? This is how you do it. You have to have this X factor about you if you don't have all the other things, because everyone else has all the other things. You need to sort of have this Hail Mary that puts you over into making you a very interesting candidate for selection. Great. So now we've picked the resumes. We've picked, you know, a good majority with the relevant work experience and good GPAs. And now we have, you know, some candidates that have, very diverse backgrounds too and have excelled in other areas. So now you'll get contacted for your first round interview. And this could be, you know, over the phone or in person, depending on if you're coming from a target or non-target. For your first round interview, it will happen. They'll contact you at least a few days beforehand. You know, what do you do in this first round interview? How is this conducted? You know, how should you dress, etc. For your dress, I mean, just make sure you look clean. Get some good shoes. Get a suit that fits. Comb your hair. Have your resume book with you. A lot of people had this little pad portfolio where they put all their resumes in. And also make sure to have a little pad with you too, in case you need to write things down, or they ask you some questions where you'll need to jot things down on paper. These things are fairly little things, but they do impact how the interview goes, because, I mean, if you're dressed very sloppily, or if you look like you just got out of bed, it goes to show that you don't have that much interest in going into investment banking, or you don't want to put your best foot forward, which is necessary for banking. So now you get to the interview. So who is going to actually interview you? Usually the way it's done is you'll have a managing director or VP, which is a more senior level person, and you'll have an associate interview you. And I'm speaking from the investment banking analyst perspective. So they'll ask a mix of behavioral and technical questions, which we'll go over in the upcoming episodes. And they'll also ask you a preference for which location of office you want to go into. And this will last usually around 20 to 30 minutes. The first round interview lasts 20 to 30 minutes. And they're trying to gauge what your interests are, what your background is, how did you come to where you are, why are you interested in banking? And we'll cover this obviously more in detail later. Also, something that happens is you have to pick your interview time slots. And is there a strategic way to pick interview time slots or is there not? I think there is a little bit. I think the best slots to pick are the first interview of the day or the very last. Personally, I like the very last even more. The reason I like the last time slot of the day more is because you can go on for as long as you want because you're the last interview of the day. So you're not limited to this 30-minute interview. You can keep going for 40 minutes, for 45 minutes if they're very interested in who you are. Also, for the first round interview, why that's good is because people from a psychological perspective always usually remember the first and the last. That's the reason for picking the first and the last. You want to be remembered as a candidate and you don't want to be forgotten with the other 30 interviews that they have throughout the day. One time slot that I'd probably try to avoid is sometime after lunch because usually people hit that food coma and they get a little bit sleepy and tired. So try to avoid the time slot after lunch, which is probably about 1:30 or 2 or 1 p.m. But, you know, this isn't a law or anything. If you get the time slot at 1:30 or 2, it doesn't mean you're not going to get the interview or not going to make it to the final round. But if you have the chance to pick the time of day, I would go for either the first or the very last spot. So after you have your first round interview, you'll usually hear back within the next 2 to 3 days. You'll get a call from HR saying, hey, we'd like to invite you to a final round interview on campus, or sorry, a final round interview on site. And if you don't get the call back, you'll probably get an email saying that, you know, you did not move on to the final round interview. Another thing I want to touch upon is, you know, some students in your class will have maybe 15 first round interviews. Everyone will be like, wow, that's so awesome. You have so many first round interviews. You know, you're so amazing. This doesn't really matter. I wouldn't get caught up in the hype of, oh, that person has this many interviews more than I do. As long as you have one interview, that's all you really need. And to be honest, having so many interviews actually hurts you because it's very difficult to prepare well for 15 different interviews. Rather than if you only have 3 interviews, you can prepare for them fully. You can understand the company a lot better. You can understand how the investment bank works. You can research on their deals. And that goes to show, it definitely demonstrates a lot through the interview process if you're a candidate has done their research and homework rather than one that is doing so many interviews. And also, if you're the candidate that is getting 15 interviews, I would cut a good amount of them. Some of the more strategic ones of the people that were going through recruiting, they actually cut quite a few of their interviews because they knew that they didn't necessarily want to go to this investment bank and they wanted more ample time to prepare for the interviews that they were very interested in. So in terms of some statistics, the way it goes is maybe there's, so of the 200 people that have applied, maybe there'll be 20 that get selected into a first round interview. So, around the top 10%, then if you move on into the final round or if you get a call back for the final round, you'll have a 50-50 shot usually of getting the internship. And for the amount of people that they invite into the final round is usually about 50% of the first round interviews. So of the 20, you'll have 10 that get invited to the final round. And then they'll probably take around 5. And this is not a hard limiter. If you're an exceptional candidate, you will get if there's 6 exceptional candidates, then they'll take the 6. And I think for bulge brackets, they have a little bit more flexibility since they have so many offices and so much capacity. Boutiques are a little bit more tight knit on this, but I wouldn't get too caught up in the numbers. But if you're making the final round interview, you have a really good shot of getting the internship or the full time offer. And I don't know if these numbers are generic to all schools, but this is how it was done at Berkeley. So it provides you a little perspective of how the numbers work. So now you got invited, and the final round interview will take place usually in the office of the location that you chose to be recruiting for. So this could be in San Francisco, New York, Chicago, LA, etc. And sometimes candidates get more than a few final rounds as well. So maybe you have four final round interviews, and final round interviews typically last a lot longer than first round interviews, not the 20 to 30 minutes, but final round interviews are usually 3 to 4 back-to-back interviews of around 30 minutes each. So they last anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 hours. So this is also known as what people call it. They call it the super day. And you'll be flown out by plane if you're going to a more remote location. They'll provide you accommodation. And this is a nervous process because, I mean, you're just a junior in college and you're, you know, interviewing for your first potential job out of school. You know, all your friends are in the rooms, waiting for their interviews. I remember where there was one day that I had 2 super days back to back. So I had one in the morning. I had to drive down to, San Jose, Palo Alto area, in the afternoon, and then had to catch a flight to New York, around 7 or 8 PM and got in to New York at very early in the morning for another super day in the morning. So it's definitely it can be a very stressful process, and it can be overwhelming at times. But I would say if you're getting, you know, if you're going on to final round interviews and you're getting super days, this is already a pretty good accomplishment. And, you know, you only need one to convert. So don't be nervous, or don't get caught up in the hype of people having multiple first round interviews or, you know, multiple super days. And it doesn't mean anything, because in the end, you can only accept one offer. So now in the super day, how does this interview look like? Who are you interviewed by? What's going on? So as I said before, it's around 4 back-to-back interviews of around 30 to 45 minutes each. So now you'll be interviewed by associates, VPs, managing directors, and sometimes even partners if they have time. This will also be a mix of technical and behavioral questions. What I usually see is some rooms are solely behavioral, and then maybe there's one that is solely technical questions. I would say if you know that you're interviewing with a partner of the firm, do your very, very best to impress him or her. It's because their decision supersedes everyone else's decision. If a partner really likes you, you have a very, very good shot of getting that internship or getting that job offer. I mean, that's not to say that, you know, the associates and the VPs, don't matter. You know, sometimes they're very vocal as well, but if the partner of your firm really vouches for you and pushes for you, you're most likely going to get that offer. And it's kind of hard to distinguish, you know, because you don't know who you're interviewing with beforehand. But if you do some research into the office and LinkedIn stalk some people and realize, oh, this is a partner of the firm, try to do your very best. Don't get nervous, but try to do your very best. Put your best foot forward, because if they like you, then you're most likely going to get that offer. And the best way to do that is to connect with them on some level. So now after you finished all the interviews for your super day, 2 to 3 hours, what happens next? So the interviewers will sit in a room and deliberate on which of the students they'll pick for the internship or for the full-time offer. And this process is usually done the same day. For the internship, I had a final round, and then I got a call back later in the evening about the offer. So the turnaround is very quick. They do this right after the last interview finishes, and everyone sits in the room and gives their opinion, and they ultimately decide the five or so that they'll decide to give internship offers to. Sometimes this takes a little bit longer. It might take a couple days, but usually you'll hear back fairly shortly. And usually you'll get a call from HR congratulating you that you've gotten the full-time offer. And this will be followed up by some calls by the managing directors or some VPs congratulating you and, you know, wanting you to accept your offer after they've given it to you. So from the start to finish, from the first round interview to the final round interview to getting your offer, this usually takes less than 2 weeks. Some can do it within a week, but this process is very quick and it happens very quickly. I also know that the investment banking recruiting timeline has been pushed up a lot recently. When I was recruiting, I had to interview in February. And I think nowadays people are going to start interviewing in September and October even. So the timeline has been pushed up quite a bit. We used to prep a lot during Christmas break, preparing for the interviews. But now it seems like you have to do that even before school starts or the first few weeks of school to make sure that you get your, to make sure you know the technical questions and you understand the financial concepts. So that is the overview of how the investment banking recruiting process goes. And now I want to touch a little bit on some of the things that I wish I knew as I was going through the process. First thing is on exploding offers. So if an investment bank gives you an offer and they say, we need to know within the next hour of what your answer is going to be, this is technically illegal because with your school policy, they are not allowed to give you exploding offers. Usually your school protects you and they give you a minimum of 2 weeks to decide so that they don't pressure candidates into accepting something that they're not necessarily ready to accept. So unless you know 100% that you want to work for that firm and someone gives you an exploding offer, you should review your school policy and see what type of protection your school offers you. And I think it's usually around 2 weeks because then you'll have that much more time to think about your offer and to maybe go through other interviews and fully make a decision before you're ready to make it. I know a few friends that had accepted exploding offers that didn't necessarily have the best experience, but wanted to throw that out there for you guys to make sure you review your school policy on your timeline for accepting offers and the policy on exploding offers. Also, something that I wasn't typically ready for when I was going through the process are some of the random questions that they ask you to test you while you're on your feet. So you have your normal behavioral questions like, why do you want to work investment banking, why did you pick your major, etc., and your technical questions. But some of the questions aren't really behavioral or technical questions. They're questions like this. They're, tell me your favorite joke. There are also questions like, list off 10 things that you can do with a brick. And then sometimes they do this mental math too. They say, tell me 34 times 15. Another one is like, what do you do better than 99% of the world? Another one could be, if the final interview slot came down to you and your best friend, who do you decide that gets it? I mean, these questions are something that can catch you easily off your feet. So I would make sure to note that be prepared for these things. At least for these questions, you can now think of some responses to them, but make sure just to be able to think quickly on your feet. Look up some random questions that people might ask because it's actually quite difficult to come up with your favorite joke on the spot if you haven't really prepared one beforehand. And also another tip that I thought was very, very helpful when I was going through the process is videotaping yourself while you are walking through some of your technical or behavioral questions. This is because you think you sound a certain way or you think you look a certain way or you think you're saying something. But unless you actually record yourself, you don't really know what you're saying. I noticed that when I record myself, I had some weird quirks about myself. My pronunciation was kind of interesting in some places. I used a lot of fillers. I didn't really explain the concept the way that I really like to, but videotape yourself going through some of these practice, these sample questions. And I think that is probably one of the most beneficial things that has happened or that I learned while going through the process. Actually videotaping yourself and making sure you look and sound the way that you want to so that you put your best foot forward. So I think that is a pretty good overview of the investment banking recruiting timeline from start to finish, including, you know, some things that an analyst look for while looking over your resumes, how the interview process works. And we will dive into the technical questions and the behavioral questions in a lot more detail in the second and third episode. So you actually know what kind of questions people are asking, and you'll have some time to think about your responses to them. But as always, thank you for listening. And I know that investment banking recruiting is different for each school and each individual. And, you know, it's impossible to cover 100% of the scenarios. So if you have any questions, please feel free to visit my website, thevampiresquid.com. Go to the contact tab, you know, and also please follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/thevampiresquid for live updates. And please stay tuned for episode 2 and 3, or part 2 and part 3. We'll talk about behavioral and technical questions. Until next time, ciao.